Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and live from Houston, Texas, the one and only Houston Beat. Dr. John Stamey, so good to be here tonight. We've got our usual crew, and we're going to have a lot of fun. First of all, from somewhere up there in the mountains of Virginia, Matt, how are you doing tonight, Matt?
I'm doing great. Great. Glad to be here.
We're glad you're here with us, and it's great. So anyway, we've got some good stuff to talk about. And Kyler Smith is with us as well. How are you, Kyler?
Great as always. Just hanging out, relaxing.
We're so glad that you're great as always. So anyway, Matt, I just wanted to jump right in. You're an experienced Bigfoot hunter. You have looked for Bigfoot in, I'm going to guess, about 10 different states. Would that be correct? Florida, North, South Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, and Tennessee, and then there's another one, right?
Yeah, I have not been to Mississippi yet, but I have gone from Maine all the way down. So I've been to Maine, I've been to all the way down to Florida. Yeah, so I've covered pretty much most of the area in the East Coast, especially the Southeast.
Well, I'll tell you what.
And some of the Midwest.
Better be careful when you go to Mississippi. Those people are crazy. Now, if you've got any listeners in Mississippi, I love you, but I'll tell you what, it's a little crazy in Mississippi.
I was going to say, Mississippi is actually one of my areas that I'm wanting to hit because I had an interesting report from there, and it's not a Bigfoot.
Matt, tell us what it is.
Okay. I got a good friend named Angel Lee, and she's a spiritual messenger, and she's the real deal. You can watch her live. I mean, she tells people stuff that she don't even know them. She tells them stuff that only they and their family would know that has passed on. But she had a weird experience she was telling me about. And this one area, they say, is the locals call this woods. They tell them the owl people live in there. So I don't know, I've never really heard of the owl people, but I've got to do a lot of research on it. But there's a report that one of them, these things had flew into a car and had a human-like face. So it was basically like a woman's face or something on this big owl creature, and it hit a car. Well, my friend, she tells me every time her or her husband go through that area, their radio starts acting up, all kinds of crazy stuff goes on through there. And she says the locals, she's supposed to show it to me. And I got a friend that does a lot of research in Mississippi. It's Glenn Williams, and he lives in Mississippi. So I'm going to get a chance to go out with him Bigfooting and try and hit up this forest that everybody says stay away from because the owl people are in it. So I don't know where it is. I haven't got that far yet. I just actually learned about it not too long ago, but it was kind of funny you brought up Mississippi.
Now, I tell you what, I want to clarify this a little bit, because tell me more about the owl people.
Now, I don't know. That's the first I've heard of them, actually, and I have to do some research on them. But supposedly, all the locals say in this area, they call them the owl people. I guess it's a huge, kind of like a Mothman type thing, but it has a human face. And it flew into this person's vehicle, and they said it had a human-like face. And where, of course, I knew Angel lived in that area, and she told me that she knows where it is. She'll tell me, give me more details whenever I talk to her. And the area, and hopefully whenever I get to make it down towards Mississippi, I'll be able to go investigate it. And my friend Glenn, of course, like I said, he's the Bigfooter in the state of Mississippi. I'm real good friends with. And he was actually on an episode of Finding Bigfoot for the Mississippi episode. And he knows all the hot spots, so Mississippi is definitely on the radar. Hopefully soon.
Gotcha. Now, when you say they have a human-like face, we believe, John LeMay and I would say, that you are talking about a shapeshifter.
That's what I was thinking, too.
A what?
A shapeshifter.
Hmm. Very possible.
And I mean, let me ask you this, because we do a lot of brainstorming here on this show. Do you think Angel would be interested in coming and talking with us about some of these things?
I'm sure she probably would. I can get a hold of her and see if she'd like to be a guest.
Absolutely. See if she wants to come on next week. We'd love to have her. And I want to know more about the owl. Now, approximately what area of Mississippi, northern, central, or southern Mississippi are you talking about these owl people?
I believe it's more from probably about the lower half of Mississippi State. I didn't quite get into details of actual where it was or anything, but it just made me think of it whenever you mentioned Mississippi. And I was like, yeah, that's on the radar, because I haven't got no info or anything yet on it. I just heard the stories and then asked her about it, and she told me, yeah, that this one area she could show me where the locals talk about the owl people, and her radio, all kinds of high strange events happen. So, you know, the energy there is definitely special. It's messing up your radio, doing all kinds of crazy stuff, frequencies. So, and we all know that's usually a sign that there's something going on there.
Exactly. And now, I don't know if you know the answer to this question or not. I can get the answer this weekend, but are you talking on the ham radio frequencies, or are you talking about the shortwave frequencies?
Shortwave, like just the radio stations and stuff like that. Now, the ham frequencies, the military group that I go out with, whenever we have activity and radiation spikes going on and have activity, usually those ham radio frequencies will go out. We will lose complete radio contact with teams out in the field whenever that
well, you know,
going
you know,
on.
Matt, you might not have known this, but I am I have my ham radio operator's license.
Okay.
And I'm working now with the Conway Myrtle Beach chapter of the ham radio operators club, and so we that's something we can talk about offline, but trying to get into that, and they've been very helpful. So we'll talk a little more about that, you know, along with Angel, and would love to have Angel on next week. If you think we could at least ask Angel if we could have her come on.
Yeah, I'll get in contact with her and ask her if we can get her on the show for sure. She's a great person. You'd like her.
I bet she is. Well, it's like you introduced me. Well, I mean, you're one of my best friends to get with, and you introduced me to another one of my best friends. He was Elijah Henderson, and me and Elijah, I mean, we just talk a lot together. He is, you know, I can't thank you enough for introducing me to him. He is one really cool person. And in fact, why don't we have him on here in, say, 2 weeks? You want to do that?
Yeah, I'd like to have him back on here. He's so knowledgeable with the folklore in areas.
He's scary cool. Now, he really is. He's like scary cast. He's very cool. Tyler, you're supposed to laugh now. I was making a joke.
Sorry.
Need
don't,
one of
don't
those
mess
with
me,
signs up.
You better laugh at Dr. John's jokes. They're bad, so you got to laugh at them, okay?
Yeah, I need one of those cue buttons.
Yeah. It says applause, laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly right. But anyway, well, that's great. That's great. And Matt, do me a favor, because I cannot jot this down because I'm busy hosting the show. But please write down Angel and Eliza, those two names, and I'll see if I can't get them on the show, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Just please don't let me forget. But anyway, that's great. So now let me ask you this. I am working toward making some paranormal friends in, of all places, Arkansas. Now, what do you know about Arkansas?
Well, of course, you know, you got the Boggy Creek, South Arkansas.
Well, you got the folk monster, but that's Wild Black. So what do we have? I don't want to jump on Lyle's stuff and get on in, because, you know, the folk monster, that is him. That's him. That's Lyle, and we'll keep it with Lyle. But who else do we know? Arkansas, and I'm going to say this, Arkansas is a spooky place. There's lots of weird, correct?
Yeah. You got that runs into the Ozarks run through there, too.
Don't they now? Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
So what are we likely to see in the Ozarks?
Well, I've had me and Angelia, before she had passed away, and I need to get the case files, but there was, in one area there, the Ozarks, there was three different witnesses that didn't know each other that had had Bigfoot report sightings, and that was on our agenda before she had passed away, to go out there and interview these individuals and stuff. And one of them, which was kind of interesting, was a pastor and a church. So, but I don't have any info on it. She was telling me about it, and it happened, you know, she got the info just right whenever she got sick, and we was planned, but then, you know, of course, things changed. But I'd like
Do you think Dale has access to those records?
I'm sure he does. I don't know where they're at, but he stays on the road so much.
Now, on your list, we're making Matt's to-do list for Houston Bigfoot. You okay with this?
I'm perfectly fine with it. Just add it to the pile.
Remember, I'm Dr. John. I'm the professor, and I give homework. So here's more homework. It says, call Dale regarding Ozarks. Okay?
Okay. All righty.
You know I'm just giving you a hard time. But I am the professor, and when I meet a capable student like Matt does, Matt has homework. That's okay. And you're glad to have homework with the professor, right?
Yeah, I've always got homework.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so anyway, I will let you know that I'm supposed to call my buddy John. He's in a place called Magazine, Arkansas. I mean, he said it's 900 people, and it's right next to the big city of Lufkin or something. But they're like 2 hours away from Fort Smith, which is a pretty sizable thing. So we'll see. I can't wait. I cannot wait to go out there. And he's got some haunted places for me to go see. I guarantee you, we might have to be doing a Kyler, we might have to get you to jump up there to Arkansas. We might have to do a scary cast live. That'd be cool. But anyway, so thanks,
cool.
Matt, for those good leads through Arkansas and the Ozarks and through Mississippi, because, you know, there are a lot of scary places in the South. And when you're talking about the South, that goes over to Arkansas, down to Texas. And it just, in my opinion, when you start, you know, I think Oklahoma is the Midwest. That's what I think. And anyway, we'll we'll leave Oklahoma to me and John LeMay as we
there
talk
you go.
About it. But anyway, oh yeah, John LeMay and I are working on a new book. We're going to have a good time. So anyway, Matt, tell us a little bit about your latest adventure that you can tell us about.
Well, I haven't had any recent ones. I've got a couple coming up in October. I've been, like I said, mostly I think I talked about last week what I had done, you know, the weekend before in the Hot Springs, North Carolina area, hiking a little bit in the Cave Springs Road. I was going to ask you guys I touched on a subject about Antarctica, probably a month and a half ago or something like that, and we talked about, you know, having access to the, you know, nobody can own Antarctica or Arctica, right? And I had heard, actually, it was kind of cool. A little follow-up. Do you remember anything about that I was talking about with the polar cusp and them finding like a huge lab supposedly under the ground up there and with these giants and these cryogenic pods?
Yeah,
I remember bits
I
and pieces.
Well, okay, I'll go back and just review real quick. Well, Angelia's daughter, Shannon, she had turned me on to the polar cusp, and it was, she's like, have you heard about this? And I'm like, no. So I started doing some research on the polar cusp. Now, in order for a portal to open, you got to have a zero magnetic field for it to naturally open. Zero magnetic field and a type of energy source so powerful, like a solar flare or nuclear energy. And that's why we believe when these high-strength events happen, we always do radiation measurements. And there's always a spike in radiation, and you got all this weird activity going on, of course, because the source of the energy coming through there is super powerful. So she was telling me in the Antarctica that there's a polar cusp. It's on both of them, actually, North and South Pole, if you believe in the North and South. Not the flat Earth theory, or even if you do the flat Earth theory in this area.
Now, Matt, be careful about that flat Earth. That has to be. Let me tell you, I got over 500 hits on Scarycast with this tribute to Dr. Trey Donovan. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
You're ready? Okay.
I'm like one of you. I'm always ready.
The Earth. 70% water.
Really?
Water is not carbonated. Therefore, the Earth is flat.
I see.
Hey, Kyler, thank you for knowing to laugh about that one. Now,
I mean,
Matt,
I heard it yesterday, but yeah.
And Matt, I'm sorry you didn't laugh. That is one of the greatest dad jokes of all time. Thank you for laughing.
Yep.
Anyway, please go ahead. Matt, I'm sorry for interrupting you. You know, sometimes I have a story that's just so funny, I just have to interrupt our speaker. Okay? Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Now, so supposedly, okay, at noon every day, the magnetic field drops so low that it opens up. It's like a portal. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, of course, nobody's allowed to own these places. You're not allowed to go there. You can't go there unless you are, you know, authorized. I don't know who would authorize you if nobody could own it, but only special teams can go up there and so forth. Well, supposedly, a long time ago, I'm not quite sure if it was in the 80s or 70s or something, but a group of scientists out of Arizona had went there supposedly, and they started leaking info that they had went below the ice, and there's a huge lab type thing underneath there, and these huge cryogenic pods were down there, and there were, I can't remember, it's 3 to 5 massive giants in these cryogenic pods that were still alive, but they were in this sleep state in those cryogenic pods. Now, inside that laboratory, they had human body parts, like they were just doing all kinds of experiments, all kinds of crazy stuff. And supposedly they said that the government did not want to wake these things up because they didn't know what they would do. And whenever, of course, the scientists kind of talked about it, of course, they shut it down. It's hard to find now. But they supposedly had, you know, told them to shut up about it and all this stuff. Well, I had got a, I'll have to look it up, but I had heard, and it's got links where this person gets his info. He always posts it. But supposedly the military was down there. These things are awake, that they've been trying to wake these things up. And these things, they were killing them once they woke them up. The military was down there killing them. I think it was around 2010, something like that. So I thought that was pretty interesting, the story that these things, they have awakened them, and that there's pretty much a war going on underneath Antarctica down there, and there's tunnels all the way from Antarctica all the way around, basically around the world, from all these areas, Arctica and Antarctica. So, and there's, you know, there's something going on up there because, for example, do you remember when Obama was up at the tip of Alaska for some reason, and China had their, they had some warships up there, and they had a meeting, something, I don't know, not too long. It was maybe his last year in office. It was in the news that he was up in tip of Alaska, you know, what's he doing up there? But I thought that's pretty interesting. I'm going to try and dig into some more info on this stuff because I think a lot of this stuff is probably coming from those areas that these tunnels are running down, and they run into national parks and everything else from these areas. Is that the Stargate portal area that these things are crossing over in? Got to ask yourself that.
That's an interesting question. It really is. I was silent. This is Dr. John. Because I was thinking about it. That's really pretty cool.
I mean, yeah, nobody's allowed to claim it. You can't go up there. Something's going on.
No.
How you guys feel about that?
You don't mean to tell me that something's going on when you can't get there from here.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, Kyler, thank you for laughing at my another bad dad joke, but it was funny. But yeah, there's lots of stuff out there, and all you have to do is watch for it. And so anyway, Matt, I don't know what question you were answering, but this was a very good response from you. So what do you think is the toughest part of your job in being a Bigfoot researcher? I think that's an important question that needs to be asked, don't you?
Yeah. When you become a researcher, of course, I try and base everything off scientific facts, because even the what they call the woo side of stuff, the crazy side, it can still be backed scientifically. So we know that it is actually possible to occur, these events and certain things that people think it's magic because they just ain't got a clue actually about anything. They're programmed one way and that's it. And if they were to look into stuff more seriously, then they would understand. But the hardest part, basically, like for example me, is the boots on the ground experience out there in this field. When you're out there getting that experience, that's your best way to is be out to experience stuff for yourself. Hardest part's probably dealing with everything that's out there, not including with the elements and stuff and your cryptids, whatever you're looking for at the time, but just the basic nature. I mean, that right there is a whole battle itself, being out in the elements. The hardest part was when I first started. Of course, I become a knower. when I had my first encounter. So then, of course, I was researching. Well, then it got to the point where I was like, okay, so what else is, you know, I thought some of these people were weird talking about this and that. But the more years of experience I got into it, I started experiencing more off-the-wall stuff, took me down the rabbit hole even farther. But my hardest part at the beginning was where these things were, where to look for these things. I had started out with all these old sightings, stuff like that, and you go out there and it's dead, you know. Most of the time you go out on these expedition stuff, you don't have activity. But I'm pretty good now with all my years of experience. I'm not saying we're going to have activity every time, but there's a better probability in my areas that I go to now than what just a basic researcher would go to, just from my experience and learning how to read the signs of recent activity and the news and the, you know, just where to look, basically. And that only comes with experience. And that and dealing with the elements is probably the two hardest things to deal with in getting into these areas to research. For example, you know, like I said, I go out for the first, I don't know, 10, 15 years, was basically just old places where they had sightings, but there's no activity going on there currently. So then I had to amp it up. But as I've learned, you know, for your signs, for example, when they do controlled burns, when they do, biggest thing is these campgrounds being shut down for no reason. Normally areas like that or missing people reports, basically, let's see what else, missing people reports, controlled burns, campgrounds.
Wait, what is that, a controlled burn? What do you mean?
It's where the government, they'll go in and they'll burn off an area. They get the underbrush, supposedly. It's usually in the spring stuff. But some of these areas don't even really need it. But just all of a sudden, out of the blue, they're doing a controlled burn in this area. And they don't tell people, you know, it's like, why are they burning that off, you know, in the middle of summer or in the middle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they, where there's high activity, they will burn off an area, and they will push whatever's in that area out. So I know to go to where I see the controlled burn was recently, I hit the opposite side of where it hadn't been burned, because it's going to push everything over to there, especially if it's happened recently.
All right, that makes sense.
That's like in Clayton, Georgia. One of the areas that I had noticed whenever we had activity that time after the Georgia Bigfoot Conference I'd went to, I told a couple of my friends, I said, we're going to hit this spot tonight because they just done a controlled burn up there on the mountain on that one side. So we're going to hit the other side. And, of course, we had activity. But those areas like that are your biggest thing. That, the closed campgrounds, recently closed campgrounds, is really important to get in there then. And then, of course, you got to deal with, you know, in the whole research thing, dealing with the other things that are out there, you know, your snakes, the poisonous snakes, the climate, the bear, all the other animals that's out there. In these areas, you don't have cell phone service, so you can't, if you get hurt, you got no, you know, hopefully you'll have a team member with you or somebody knows where you're at, where to look for you, because you're not going to have cell phone service in a lot of these areas that we investigate. So I'd say that was probably the most difficult, though, is probably the boots on the ground field research. That's why whenever I visited the Everglades, that's another place I want to hit. I went to where David Shealy had his sightings of the skunk ape down there in the Everglades, and I respect him a lot because, for example, in the Everglades, he went out before he actually got he had his first encounter when he was a kid, and then he went to this one area there in the Everglades that for 6 months straight he went every single day. And he actually finally, after 6 months of going there every single day, actually got 27 photos of Skunk Ape out there. And then that was in 1997 or 98. And then in like 2000, he actually got a video of one. But it takes that kind of dedication to get this kind of research evidence in some of these areas. And I just appreciate these boots on the ground field researchers, especially whenever, you know, you got all these other armchair researchers out there saying, well, that's not real. You don't see lights. You don't see orbs. I'm like, buddy, you ain't been out there. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen lights coming through the woods. I've seen, you know, with no explanation. And like the Everglades, David Shealy, that he retired because he about died, I don't know how many times. He's been, that's because they got salt water down there too. Where the Everglades meet, I took some pictures actually where he had his sighting. I'd went to that area when I was down in Florida. And, you know, he's got crocodiles, alligators, you got stingrays, you got these huge poisonous snakes, you got these, he's got this huge python. It was the second largest in the world. I don't know if it's largest now. He's got his little thing there. But he told me about these different things, these pythons. They'll try and strike you right in the face. He just looked up, happened to see one out getting. So he's been stuck out in one of these islands out there in the Everglades because a stingray had stung him, and he had the barb stuck, and he had to get it out. And he was out there, I think he said 48 hours maybe, out there on his own. You know, then my biggest problem when I went out there was the mosquitoes. It was 90, almost 100 degrees out there, and these mosquitoes are still out there. Normally they don't come out, I don't think, when it's super hot. But once I went to the Everglades, I found out for sure they definitely do. They're out there nonstop.
Those mosquitoes bug the hell out of me. I wouldn't even be worried about everything else. It's just like as soon as I see the mosquitoes eating me alive, I'm done.
Yeah, they're bad. I couldn't believe it. I was like,
yeah,
gosh.
That's my first sign.
The heat is what I was like, well, because whenever I grew up in Indiana, we lived next to a creek, and mosquitoes were horrible there. But it was once the sun started going down, started cooling off, is when the mosquitoes would come out. So during the heat of the day, they didn't bother you. But in the Everglades, yeah, they don't care if it's 100 degrees, 115. They're still out there. They're trying to feast on you.
See, that's how it is over here in Texas, like during the summer. They're just out all day long, and I'm not used to that. So, I mean, you'll just be walking around a path, even like in the backyard, and they'll just be sitting on you. Even if you smack it away, it doesn't matter. It's relentless. It'll just sit there until you kill it.
Yep. Yep, exactly. But that's the hardest part, I think, about the whole research is just dealing with being out in the field, dealing with the elements. And then, you know, trying to get all this data and info that you can. And, you know, you got all these elements that, like I said, the snakes, the poisonous, venomous snakes, the, you know, bear attacks, anything out there. I mean, you've got all kinds, you know, mountain lion, got all kinds of stuff. Then you got to worry about, you know, whatever the cryptids that are in that area. Of course, that's what you're out there for, but, you know, you got to be on your toes nonstop. That is definitely the hardest part about being a researcher, especially a boots-on-the-ground researcher.
Definitely sounds like a big planned expedition, not just a, all right, well, I feel like going somewhere today.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, if you're going out there, especially for a few days or something, I do a lot of quick day trip sometimes on my own just because I get the urge. I got to check something out. But I prepare if I'm going to be out there for a long time. If I'm just going out there pretty quick, short, then, you know, I prepare for the length of time I'm going to be out there. But you still have to, no matter how long you're out there or what, you still got to always be on your toes. It's not as pleasant as everybody thinks.
I like to watch a bunch of nature shows just because it's cool to see all the different places and, you know, all the nature walking around. And there was this family that tried to do that exact thing, you know, kind of just, you know, maybe we'll just get a family that's been in this one spot in Antarctica before and we'll be fine. We don't need anything else. You know, we don't really need to plan a whole lot. And, of course, you know, they go out there, and one of them is actually attacked while they're sleeping by the polar bear. And thank God, I mean, they were all rescued, and he turned out fine. But they got one of those, I can't remember their actual job name, but it's one of the hunters or guides that spots out the polar bears in these types of expeditions. And he pretty much told them, like, yeah, you guys were being hunted the entire time from the moment you got here. There's at least five of them surrounding you right now. And they had no idea.
Right. Yeah, it's probably a professional hunting guide or spotter, probably, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely crazy.
I had actually had a offer to, have you ever seen that show Alone?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
The TV show. I had a actual email from them, and they was interested in me going on the show because, you know, the Bigfoot hunter or whatever, you know, would be good for their storyline. And I actually had to – I would be great, but I finally talked myself out of it because I'm addicted to Coca-Cola, and you're not allowed to take stuff like that with you. And I can't go 30 minutes without a Coca-Cola, so I've got to have my caffeine. And so I definitely couldn't be out there, up there in Alaska, with no Coca-Cola, grizzly bears, all this other stuff. I don't know. I'd probably be fighting one by the end of the day if I didn't have a Coca-Cola. It'd probably be an interesting show because my stress level would be out of the roof by the time that come around. But I'd have to detox before I actually went out there without no Coca-Cola. So
yeah, that's not something I would have ever. That's not something I ever would have guessed that somebody couldn't go out there with without.
It was I was all gung-ho for it. I had replied to their email. They replied back. They was wanting a video. So I made a video. And then I was actually, I didn't even think about that until mine and John's friend Lori Wade had mentioned to me. She's like, you know, you can't take, because they only had a list of like 10 items you're allowed to take with you out there. And you have to get all your water, your drink, and food out there off the land. You're not allowed to take any food, water, any of that stuff. Now, they do give you some kind of jerky or something to take a small, limited amount of it, but it didn't have caffeine in it. So I knew right then, she's like, look how addicted you are to those Coca-Colas, because I have got to have one. I can't go 30 minutes without having a drink of that Coca-Cola, that caffeine. So on my expeditions, you'll see my cooler, and it will be loaded down with Coca-Colas whenever I go out in the field. I just can't do it. That's bad. I got to quit, but that's another thing out there, you know.
Yeah, we definitely got sidetracked. I actually had a question a while ago I totally okay. forgot about. I have some family that's actually living in Wyoming right now. And I don't know if you've ever – have you been up there yet?
No. Farthest west I've been is Colorado.
Okay.
This is Dr. Jim.
That was my question.
Absolutely. I have been. It's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, they were sending me pictures of the mountains and all the trees surrounding them. So that's – my immediate thought was to come here and ask and see if we've heard any activity around there.
Well, it doesn't get as much coverage because the population is, you know, the population isn't very high in those areas, but there's all kinds of activity that you can get from the locals and stuff like that around Wyoming, Idaho, the whole area up there, Montana, it's just loaded with all kinds of things. So, yeah, a lot of your locals are where you'll get your info from those area states mostly. That's why if you look on some of these sighting reports and stuff, you won't have a lot of the stuff. I have a friend actually had sent me pictures and they were in Wyoming. She's a traveling nurse, and they run Squatching Outfitters, and they take people out on expeditions, and they take them out fly fishing, too. So they're out there fly fishing plus bigfooting, and they are located in North Georgia, but she had sent me some pictures. She had went out there in Wyoming, and in the snow, where she's a bigfooter, too, so she goes out there, and she had some spare time in between her shifts, and out there in the snow, huge tracks, and we're talking like a, I think it was anywhere from 4 foot to 6 foot stride going up into the mountain there that she had sent me, that she had got around there. She didn't go up in there. She kind of got spooked, had a bad feeling. But there's a lot of activity up in those areas, lots of it.
It'd be great and to, it, I'm going to see if I can reach out to her and see if she knows anyone who's seen anything and try and maybe even bring them on. Because, yeah, I don't know anyone from over there other than my family member that's there.
Yeah, I don't know anybody out there except for, well, that good friend of mine, that Sheila, that went up there. She's a traveling nurse, and they had her up there for I forget how many months. And this was this past winter. And so she had sent me some pictures, actually, of some stuff that she had come across, and those tracks was pretty awesome, especially the stride, the length of those strides on those, on the, out there in the snow. And it definitely wasn't a human, so not with that big of a stride. If it was, it was a very big person.
Well, I mean, even if it's, if there's not a whole lot of people out there anyway, why would it, why would a person be trying to fake it? There's no point.
Exactly. Exactly right. Yep.
There's got to be, yeah, there has to be plenty of good stories that not a lot of people have heard of, so that gives me some excitement to try and figure out.
Because a lot of the, I'd say you probably don't have a whole lot of sales service out there in those areas either for social media and everything else. So your locals, you know, they may talk amongst each other. And, yeah, definitely be good to get some somebody that's local up there, some info.
The only time I've driven through there, too, was during, like, a huge blizzard. And you could barely see, I mean, a few feet in front of you. You had to pull over and wait for it to pass. So I'm thinking, you know, they've got the people that the locals obviously have got to have witnessed either. I remember from John's story that one of his encounters, he was up in a cabin somewhere and they would like, I want to say they were knocking or holding the door or something like that. I can't remember exactly the story, but my immediate thought is they would go through something kind of similar.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. My brain's kind of racing right now. It's kind of think of trying to put together a story that they would be telling me right now.
But yeah, that area is the population is so low. There's so much land. It's kind of like Alaska. I love Alaska. I'm definitely going to be doing an expedition up there.
Hey, Matt, that sounds like a great idea. And I'll bet you Kyler and I would both go, wouldn't we, Kyler?
Absolutely. I'm going to be freezing my ass off, but it'd be worth it.
Yeah, that's a friend of mine that lives up there. Here it is. Talked to him this past week, and they said the temperature high was 43 degrees, but up on top of the mountain it was low 30s, and that was during the peak summertime that area. So about an hour away from Anchorage. So yeah, I couldn't imagine. I can't handle the cold. I mean, I'm a wuss, I guess. I grew up an hour south of Chicago. That was enough for me. 22 years up in that area. I moved south. Now I'm even ready to move farther south. So
we'll see you in Florida, buddy.
Yeah. Actually, maybe sooner than what you think. I've got stuff in the works. That's a different story. So, but yeah, definitely. Wyoming's an interesting area. All those areas out there, you know, with from Idaho to Montana. Of course, you know, there's a lot of reports in Oregon and California and just all the areas that the population, you know, you've got more acreage out there than per person in a lot of those areas. Unlike, you know, some of these areas around here. I mean, there's some up here in the mountains, you know, you still got so much wilderness and stuff, but you got, I think, a little bit more population. It's higher around these areas. That's why you get a lot more reports down here in these mountains compared to out west, because there's not a lot of people that live up in those areas, in those states.
So I've spent some time, there you are, John.
I was just listening, and I'm going to tell you something. You're out there in Colorado, and you are in a place like Estes Park, Colorado, and there are 5 hotels, a Safeway grocery store, and 2 haunted hotels. You know what? There are not a lot of people there, and it is, to be honest with you, it can be terrifying. If you can just go get one of my books, Look Up in the Sky, I think, you know, even the latest edition still has that, The Professor and the Ghost, those stories about how vacant it is up there, and it can be terrifying.
Definitely. Okay. Definitely. I mean, if you're out there, no cell phone service, no nothing. I mean, you have an emergency, you're pretty much on your own.
And you're 7,000 feet above sea level, and there's, oh, my God, you don't know how vacant it can be up there. I mean, just, you know. But anyway, it's great. We live in a wonderful country with lots of crazy things that we can certainly explore. Right, Matt?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I've got so much on my list. Just not enough time. This work thing's stealing my research and social time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. And you know, Matt, we really enjoyed it tonight. I mean, I think we're going to do it next week and the next and the next. So be sure to get up. We've got our little to-do list. See if Angel would be glad to be with us next week. And Kyla, will you be here next week?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, good. And Matt, you coming back?
Oh, yeah. And I've got, in the month of October, I'll be on about 3 expeditions. At least, I know 2, possibly 3 in the month of October. So, just within the next month, I'll be getting a lot more field. Hopefully have some more stories, too.
Some field time. That'll be great.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you what, Matt. It's been great having you on here. Kyler, it's been great having you on here. Houston Bigfoot's a lot of fun. And we'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. And who knows who we'll have as a guest. We'll have a guest, and it'll be a lot of fun. So this is Dr. John saying sayonara. That's what they say in Japan. Sayonara from Bigfoot, and we'll see everybody next week. Now, everybody say goodbye, Matt. Say goodbye, and Kyler, say goodbye.
Bye, guys. Good night.
Have a good night.
That's exactly right. Everybody take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.